The Supreme Court could take sledgehammer to agency power. Explain what this case is all about and why that's called Chevron.
Yeah, so it takes its name from a previous Supreme Court case, a landmark case back in the mid-1980s called Chevron. And this is something that most people haven't heard of. I hadn't heard of it until a few months ago, but it turns out to be, you know, incredibly important. It's one of the most cited Supreme Court cases of recent decades. And essentially what it says is that—
And it's really Chevron versus NRDC, right? The Natural Resources Defense Council.
That's right. And essentially what it says is that judges and courts should defer to federal agencies like the EPA or the FDA or the Department of Labor when those agencies come up with regulations. So it really insulates the agencies from challenges from business and others when the federal agencies issue a regulation that somebody might not like. And, you know, for years now, the Koch Political Network has had this ruling in its sights. And the case in the upcoming term, that case is called Loper-Bright. And it was actually brought by Koch Network lawyers who are representing the plaintiffs. They brought it in the lower court and have shepherded it to the Supreme Court. And a lot of legal observers think that the Supreme Court is, with the new conservative supermajority, is going to use this case as the opportunity to overturn this Chevron precedent back from the 1980s, which would, you know, people we talked to said would just have huge ramifications for, you know, the executive branch's ability to issue regulations in basically every part of American life.
And explain exactly how it would benefit the Koch brothers, whose fundraisers, apparently, you exposed, Justice Thomas attended and was the draw for.
Yeah, well, ideologically, of course, the Kochs are libertarians, you know, going back many decades. You know, we noted in our story that when David Koch actually ran for vice president on the Libertarian Party ticket back in 1980, and the platform called for just abolishing the EPA, Department of Energy, U.S. Postal Service, a whole range of federal agencies. But the Kochs have, you know, run, I believe, the largest or second largest private company in the country that operates in a lot of highly regulated sectors, particularly energy, oil, gas, that sort of thing. And, you know, for years have been bristling at government regulations, challenging regulations in court. And if this Chevron doctrine is overturned by the Supreme Court, it's going to make it much, much easier to challenge a regulation if you as a company don't like it. So it's the type of thing that it's not going to be like the Dobbs decision where abortion rights are taken away overnight, but it can affect vast numbers of regulations going forward, basically in any area you can conceive of.
Now, Justice Thomas has flipped on Chevron?
Yeah, the other really striking thing about this, and we still don't really have all the answers, is that Justice Thomas 20 years ago was a supporter of Chevron, wrote decisions citing it, expanding it, actually. And then in the last few years, culminating in 2020, he came out in a written opinion saying, actually, I've changed my mind and Chevron is unconstitutional and we should overturn it. This is extremely unusual, especially for Justice Thomas, who has a reputation as being sort of stubbornly independent and unmovable in his views. Now, to be clear, we don't know that this is related to his relationship with the Kochs, but it's something that you almost never see. In fact, I can't think of another example where Justice Thomas has done a full 180 turn on an issue. So that's part of the backdrop here.
And Leonard Leo, the Federalist Society leader, said in a statement to you, to ProPublica, quote, Justice Thomas attends events all over the country, as do all the justices. I was privileged to join him. All the necessary due diligence was performed to ensure the justices' attendance at the events was compliant with all ethics requirements. Your response to that, and then just summarize, I mean, ProPublica has published one story after another. One, would Clarence Thomas be recusing himself? And where these stories, it's not only Harlan Crow, it's not only the Koch brothers, you also had that piece in between, talking about other billionaires subsidizing his vacations to the tune of millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, in terms of the recusal, it's another thing about the Supreme Court. The recusal decisions are made entirely by each justice, him or herself. So Chairman Durbin of the Senate Judiciary Committee called on Friday for Justice Thomas to recuse himself from this Loper-Bright case that the Koch network has brought to the court. Justice Thomas hasn't responded yet that I've seen. You know, in terms of where the stories are going, you know, we're still reporting on the entire Supreme Court. And, you know, if anyone out there knows anything, please get in touch. But, you know, I think, and to Leonard Leo's statement just briefly that mentioned ethical requirements being met, I mean, they did not elaborate on that. And everyone we've talked to said that, you know, ethical requirements were not met, in particular, being flown out to Palm Springs on a private jet paid for by somebody else, apparently, is something that you just have to disclose. And Justice Thomas did not hear.
What else are you working on, Justin?
Can't talk about what's next, but still on the Supreme Court beat with my colleagues, so we're still going on it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Justin Elliott, reporter for ProPublica, co-wrote their new report headlined Clarence Thomas Secretly Participated in Koch Network Donor Events. And just this interesting point, a piece in The Guardian, workers at Bohemian Grove, that secretive workers at Bohemian Grove, one of the most elite and secretive clubs in the U.S., have filed a lawsuit alleging numerous unfair labor practices, including 16-hour workdays without breaks and a failure to pay overtime and minimum wage to the workers. Well, next up, New Jersey Democratic Senator Robert Menendez has been indicted, along with his wife, for allegedly accepting large bribes to benefit the Egyptian government. We'll go to Cairo, Egypt, and to New Jersey for the latest. Stay with us.
Told you, baby, one more time. Don't make me sit all alone and cry when it's over. I know it, but I can't let go. I'm like a fish out of water, cat in a tree now. You don't even want to talk to me when it's over. I know it, but I can't let go. He won't take me back.
Go by Della May. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to the indictment of New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez, who resigned Friday as chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, though continues to be a senator. He and his wife were indicted Friday in a sweeping bribery case. Federal prosecutors accused Menendez of accepting bribes in exchange for using his position to increase U.S. military aid to Egypt and to do favors for three New Jersey businessmen, including Wael Hanna, an Egyptian-American who ran a lucrative business certifying halal meat exports. This is Manhattan federal prosecutor Damian Williams.
First, the indictment alleges that Senator Menendez used his power and influence, including his leadership role on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, to benefit the government of Egypt in various ways. Among other actions, Senator Menendez allegedly provided sensitive, non-public, U.S. government information to Egyptian officials and otherwise took steps to secretly aid the government of Egypt. We also allege that Senator Menendez improperly pressured a senior official at the U.S. Department of Agriculture to protect a lucrative monopoly that the government of Egypt had awarded to Hanna, a lucrative monopoly that Hanna then used to fund certain bribe payments.
That's U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of New York, Damian Williams. He went on for the Southern District. He went on to describe what investigators uncovered during their search of Senator Menendez's home.
Now, as part of this investigation, special agents with the FBI executed search warrants on the residence and safe deposit box of Senator Menendez and Nadine Menendez in New Jersey. When they got there, they discovered approximately $500,000 of cash stuffed into envelopes and closets. Some of the cash was stuffed in the senator's jacket pockets. And some of the cash, some of the envelopes of cash contained Davies' fingerprints or Davies' DNA. That's not all. Agents also discovered a lot of gold. Gold that was provided by Davies and Hanna. This is the Mercedes-Benz that we allege that Uribe provided as part of the scheme. What you see here are 3 kilograms of gold. These 3 kilograms together are worth approximately $150,000. And of course here you can see just a fraction of the cash that was uncovered as part of the scheme.
And Damian Williams is pointing to cash in the windbreakers and coats and clothes of Senator Menendez at home. According to prosecutors, after a trip to Egypt in 2021, Senator Menendez searched on Google, "How much is 1 kilo of gold worth?" unquote. This is not the first time Senator Menendez has faced corruption charges. He was indicted in 2015, but the Justice Department ultimately dropped the charges in 2018 after a jury could not reach a verdict. Menendez is facing growing calls to resign from New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, at least 6 members of the New Jersey congressional delegation. That's 6 congressmembers, not including his own son, who's a congressmember in New Jersey. Democratic Congressmember Andy Kim has already announced he will run against Menendez. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York has called for him to resign. But George Santos, the other indicted congressman, has said he should stay. We're joined now by 2 guests. Lina Atalla is co-founder of the independent Cairo-based news website Matamasser, where she is now an editor, and she's the publisher. In 2019, Matamasser helped expose a critical part of the story. The expose was headlined, "How the Multi-Million-Dollar Business of Certifying Halal Meat Imports Was Monopolized." We're also joined by Bob Henley, an award-winning reporter who's been covering Democratic Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey for decades, an investigative reporter with Insider New Jersey and Salon. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Bob, we're going to begin with you in New Jersey. Just lay out these charges.
Well, so it's lifestyles of the rich and elected. What is so jarring is the gold bullion in the pictures. There's also this new Mercedes-Benz, the C-130 worth $60,000 convertible that showed up. There was also really sloppy texting back and forth between Ms. Menendez and Nadine Arcelarian, who had just, I guess, married Mr. Menendez a few years back, between the senator and all the principals. It's almost like, Amy, like he wanted to be caught. Because there was just really no effort to draw. Well, there was a couple of text messages, like, let's not text and email. But they have really been able to lay out a roadmap that's very compelling. And I think that's part of the reason why, in addition to the fact that the entirety of the New Jersey legislature is up in 2023. And people may be surprised to know that Donald Trump didn't win New Jersey, but he got more votes here in the past. And so Democrats, who are really trying to draw a contrast between the insurrectionists and Donald Trump, really can't afford to have Bob Menendez hang around.
So explain further these, for example, gold bars that were found that had the fingerprints of one of the other men indicted.
That's right. It was DNA evidence that linked it to these individuals. There was also really something that's perhaps even more troubling than the corruption involving Senator, but he attempted to try to get involved with ongoing criminal investigations with the New York State Attorney General. And there's even great bit of detail surrounding the current U.S. Attorney, Phil Selinger, who was with the law firm Greenberg Traurig, very connected politically. And apparently there was a situation where Menendez, before Selinger was nominated by President Biden, actually wanted to exact for him a guarantee that he would intervene on behalf of one of his friends who was part of this great lifestyles and the rich elected. And Selinger said, well, listen, according to Mr. Williams' indictment, you know, I may have to recuse myself because I have like a professional conflict there. And then Menendez feigned that he was going to withhold Selinger's support of Selinger, which makes all the difference, and then switched back to supporting Phil Selinger. So this really, this has legs, as they say. Mm.
This is House Representative. This is Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez being interviewed Sunday on Face the Nation.
You know, I think it's the situation is quite unfortunate, but I do believe that it is in the best interests for Senator Menendez to resign in this moment. As you mentioned, consistency matters. It shouldn't matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. The details in this indictment are extremely serious. They involve the nature of not just his, but all of our seats in Congress. And while, you know, as a Latina, there are absolutely ways in which there is systemic bias, but I think what is here in this indictment is quite clear.
So that's AOC speaking on Sunday, calling for Bob Menendez to resign. As we are broadcasting right now, it's right before the news conference he'll hold from Union City, his hometown in New Jersey. Not clear what he's going to say at that point. Six New Jersey Congress members of the nine have called for him to resign. He's already stepped down, head of Senate Foreign Relations Committee. His own son has not called yet for him to resign. Cory Booker has not made a statement yet, other New Jersey senator. But his position, which he did step down from Friday, Bob, Senate Foreign Relations Committee, extremely significant, given his position on Egypt, one of the leading recipients of U.S. military aid in the world after Israel. He plays such a key role there. Also went to Egypt a few years ago. And what that role is and what the connection is, the allegations are— when it comes to lobbying basically for Egypt. He contends in a recent interview he did on CNN after it was leaked that his home was raided, that he has stood up for human rights in Egypt.
Well, I guess one of the things here is that he has put his finger on the scale before. What is so troubling about this is that the USDA stepped forward at one point when it was made aware of his attempt to help his pal, his contributor, get control over the halal export market, which is, you know, worth millions of dollars. They were pointing out, hey, there's other American businesses that are going to be hurt by this. This tracks exactly, Amy, with his pattern in practice with the Federal Drug Administration, with Dr. Salman Melgen. In that case, it was alleged that Melgen was taking a dose of eye medicine and splitting it several ways and then, you know, putting people's health at risk. He was a major donor to Bob Menendez. He was convicted for a $75 million fraud, which, by the way, I hate to always have to mention Trump in this segment. Trump commuted his sentence. Bob Menendez, as you said in the opening, did escape conviction with a hung jury. But the Senate seriously admonished him. So the fact pattern was established. So this is what he does.
I want to bring Lina Atala into this conversation, publisher of the Cairo-based Matamasser. When we were in Egypt for the UN Climate Summit, Lina, we came to you and did a profile on your organization, your independent news organization, Matamasser. Now, while you didn't mention Menendez in your 2019 report, how the multi-million dollar business of certifying halal meat imports was monopolized, if you can talk about what your reporter found at that time to explain to people what exactly happened with the monopolization of the certification of halal meat. All meat coming into Egypt must be halal, right? How does that happen?
So thank you, Amy. It's great to be back on the show. So what happened, and I must say that we're very excited to see our story being a small tentacle to something that is, you know, much more huge in terms of corruption. But what happened back in 2019 is that our reporter Nada Arafat and her editor Mohammed Hamema noticed a steep increase in imported meat prices, And they simply decided to follow the thread of what is causing this increase in prices. And Egypt is a major meat importer. So, you know, by following the thread of how the prices were brought up, we found that it is a story of monopolization. How? So basically, for any company, any supplier of meat to supply Egypt with meat, they have to get from official certifiers a halal certification. That is, that the meat is slaughtered in accordance and in compliance with Sharia laws. But then what happened is that Egypt allows certain certifiers to provide the certification, except that in 2019, Egypt suddenly disqualified all certifiers, with the exception of this one company called ISEG, whose founder is basically none other than Will Hanna or Waleed Hanna, who is mentioned as one of the main defendants and one of the main mediators, paying off Senator Menendez for services for the Egyptian government. We followed the thread of the company and how basically this one company, after disqualifying all the certifiers, the moment it got it was allowed to provide certification, it raised exponentially the fees of a certificate. So basically, one container of meat, which used to cost $200, now under the monopoly, would cost $5,000 to be certified. The banning of certifiers started off in the U.S. and then was extended to Latin America, another major importer, another major supplier of meat to Egypt. So that caused the prices to go to surge all the way up. Now, I can tell more about ISEG if you're interested.
But yes, the main thing ISEG about with Wael Hanna, who has also been indicted, and who exactly he is in the United States, but also in Egypt, who exactly he's working for.
So we knew nothing about Wael Hanna before doing this investigation. He's an Egyptian immigrant who lives in the U.S. We have not traced in our 2019 investigation his direct connections with the authorities here. We now saw this in the indictment document, the 40 pages indictment document, so it's clear what kind of connections he has. But basically, Wael is listed as the founder of this company that became the sole certifier of halal certifications, which is something that was granted to him from the Egyptian government.
And just to be clear, he had never been involved with certification of halal before.
Not at all.
In fact, he himself is Christian.
Exactly. So Wael is a Christian, and ISEG was established in New Jersey in 2017, but had nothing to do with meat certification until it received this privilege from the Egyptian government in 2019. Now, another interesting connection is that Wael's lawyer, a person whose name we found during our investigation, is a certain Howard Dorian, who's a lawyer and who has a massive disciplinary history and has been suspended several times. So Dorian is the person who sets up ISEG, and at the same time, Dorian sets up another company also in the U.S., a company called Meditrade. And Meditrade basically became the sole distributor with ISEG of the halal certificates to meat suppliers. Now, trying to follow the thread of who owns Meditrade, we find two things: that Wael Hanna is listed as director in Meditrade, but that also Meditrade in the chain of ownership happens to be associated with what we call in Egypt sovereign bodies. Sovereign bodies in Egypt usually refers to high-level security apparatuses operating in the country.
Wait, you're talking about Egyptian military intelligence?
I can't tell.
I know it's difficult to report in Egypt. So The significance of this in 2023, your report in 2019, linking Menendez to this.
The significance of it is that, you know, what started off as a small tentacle that is, you know, a very straightforward story of financial corruption, where, you know, a single company is, you know, making an average of $11 million in profit a year out of having, you know, taken the monopoly over over this business. And of course, you know, causing meat prices to rise, which is a very, like, again, direct financial corruption story that has a direct effect on people's life. Now also gained this political dimension that, you know, now we see from the indictment document, you know, what are the profits of this company being used for? And, you know, it circles back to doing services for the Egyptian government, such as, you know, negotiating the suspension on certain portions of the annual military aid that receives from the U.S. Egypt is one of the largest recipients of U.S. military aid, $1.3 billion. And, you know, there have been issues with suspending a portion of that in human rights conditionality. And Senator Menendez was cited, according to the indictment report, to have intervened in order to try and influence this decision. So what was straightforward financial corruption, you know, had this major political tentacle that, you know, affects, I would say, bilateral relations to a great extent.
And, of course, when we were in Egypt at the UN Climate Summit, there was a major campaign going on to free Egyptian political prisoners, among them Ala Abdel Fattah, who remains in prison. Menendez serving as chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at the time. Do you think this could affect whether or not he would raise these issues, as so many have been, when it comes to giving U.S. military aid to Egypt, one of the largest recipients in the world?
So from what I saw in this indictment form, I would never believe that this is a person that was in any form or way working towards supporting the human rights situation in Egypt that was repeatedly cited by the U.S. also in the context of the annual aid, and that was cited also in a specific relation to the release of political prisoners, young people who have been lingering in prisons for years and years for a tweet, for expressing themselves, which is basically the case of the prominent Ali Abdel Fattah. So you know, I would, you know, wonder what this example tells us about how serious the talk about human rights conditionality. If this is an example of a senator.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. This is very interesting, goes way beyond this particular indictment. Also, Hisham Kassem, well-known journalist, co-founder of the Free Current Movement of liberal political parties in Egypt, just arrested, as well as are so many others imprisoned in Egypt right now. Lina Atala, publisher and editor of the Cairo, Egypt-based Matamasser, speaking to us from Cairo. And Bob Hennelly, award-winning reporter who's been covering Democratic Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey for decades. We'll link to his reports in Insider New Jersey and Insider NJ and Salon. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week, I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia. broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Dear listeners, as